Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, I went on the Sunbury Motors website. Boy, they have some great product line. And a few things that certainly interest me. You can do that as well. And also, the service department at Sunbury Motors open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday for the Sunbury Motors service department. And they do great work there. Great work. Okay, so we're going to hear from Kirk Sciarca in two parts today. Jimmy Sotos is going to be with us at 4:35. He did a great job with Bucknell, and now he's hoping to do the same thing in Columbus. Charlie Casserly is going to join us on the show Friday. Also, Tim Banks, they had to reschedule his Zoom conference from today to tomorrow. So in the rescheduling, we'll hear from Tim Banks on Penn State football's defensive side tomorrow. Matt now joins us. I understand that there's a little wardrobe battle going on with young Luke in your house.
That is exactly right.
That whenever you're not around, young Luke is, I understand, wearing Steeler garb?
That is exactly what is happening. It's truly the Battle of Pennsylvania right now.
Well, do you really think against the mom you can win this battle?
Yes.
You do?
I do. Because here's the thing, and I am actual evidence of this. See, I came out of a Giants family, but because my parents really didn't know too much about sports growing up, I was influenced by my friends when I was older and became an Eagles fan. So he can wear the Steelers gear all he wants now, and I'm still obviously making him wear Eagles gear, but once he gets old enough to play along with Daddy, Daddy's going to come right in and swoop him into Philadelphia. So she can have all the laughs now, but I'll have the last laugh. So I hope.
Okay, let's start with this. All right, let's start with this. Remember how I talked about it's the mom?
Yes.
Don't be naive.
There could be some denial in there. I'm not going to totally kid you on that one.
Could be? I'm telling you. You're going to be naive.
I will have failed as a father if he doesn't become an Eagles fan.
You will not fail as a father. You won't fail as a father. All right?
Well, thank you.
You know,
thank you.
There'll be a certain level of embarrassment that you'll have to explain to your friends.
Well, my family will just laugh at me because they'll think it's funny. There'll be payback for what I did to them.
I got a great story today. And this comes from my good friend Dave Baker sent this to me. So I've got to get this in a second here. And Bakes, actually, let's see, I got to go back down here. There we go. This is when the State College Spikes started in 2006. Nine guys from that team ended up making the majors. Nine guys. One of them was a first baseman by the name of Mark Hamilton. Hamilton was from Tulane. He was the Conference USA Player of the Year. First baseman. First legitimate power guy the Spikes had. He did not, by the way, get along great with the manager, Mark Dijon. DJ was a guy that had been the bullpen coach for the Cardinals with Tony La Russa. Had his own way of doing things. Meanwhile, to be honest with you, Hamilton's an intellectual. Mark was an intellectual and came from a family that very much valued athletics, but also very much valued academics. His father, Stanley, longtime head of pathology and lab medicine at the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. And his dad has since moved on to Southern California, where he has the same position at City of Hope. But when Mark was playing here in State College, his dad was at MD Anderson in Houston. And talk about athletic family. His brother played soccer in college. His sister was an equestrian. His grandfather, I remember having Mark on a pregame show and talking about his grandfather, who was an outstanding player in the forerunner to the NBA. So that's the kind of athletic family, but also intellectual family that Mark Hamilton came from. Hamilton was really the first legit power guy with the Spikes. And he had come here with a guy named Nathan Southard. And Southard actually won a game. He was with Tulane, with Hamilton. And Southard was the center fielder. And Southard actually won a game in the 10th inning against Williamsport when he had a walk-off inside the park home run. James Barksdale had been the center fielder for Williamsport. He dove for it, and he couldn't get it. Went all the way to the wall, and Southard came around, scores great. So those two came from Tulane together. So Mark is here. I mean, and he, you know, now again, he didn't get along with Mark Dijon, because Dijon said he's a prima donna. And Dijon says quietly suspended him for two games because he didn't like his attitude. Like, I was like, now, I was 180 of that. I thought Mark Hamilton was a great guy to deal with. I kept telling DJ, I said, Mark, I said, I'm telling you, yeah, I know what you're trying to do here, but, like, I said, kind of hear him out. Hamilton's a smart kid. And, then, you know, they kind of, like, found at least some common ground as the season went. Well, eventually Hamilton works his way through the minors, and he gets himself to the majors with the Cardinals in 2011. He gets a late call-up in September, in September 2010. He's with the Cardinals at the end of 2010. Then in 2011, he's back and forth on the AAA shuttle. And his biggest problem with the Cardinals is quite simply somebody by the name of Albert Pujols. Okay, that was the first baseman for the Cardinals, and Hamilton played first base. But Hamilton was able to get up with the Cardinals. 4th of July, big crowd, Busch Stadium, right? Scoreless game. He drives in the game-winning run in the 8th inning off Johnny Cueto. And in a year where the Cardinals won the division by a game, that game-winning hit was one of the keys to them winning the division and getting to the playoffs. Hamilton was not active during the playoffs, but because he was with the team for a chunk of the season, he did get a World Series ring. Hangs on in pro ball until finally in July of 2014, he gets released. It's 3 days before his 30th birthday. So you're saying, where are you going now with Mark Hamilton in this story? World Series ring, played in the majors, whole deal, right? Well, his family's in medicine. So he wants to go into the field of interventional radiology. And now he's in the first year as an internal medicine resident. And guess what he is doing? He is working extensively with patients admitted to the Long Island Jewish Medical Center and North Shore University Hospital in the Northwell Health System on COVID-19. He and his wife, Lauren, and their two children, who are 9 and 6 respectively, girls, live in Queens. And it's about a 15-minute drive from Queens to the hospital center, to the medical center. He is also spending elective weeks in the ICU. He says, I'm in the front line, straight out of school. It's daunting. But Hamilton says, I'm ready and I'm prepared. By the way, also says he can't remember the last time he picked up a bat. And he doesn't play the what-if game. He said, would I trade it now? No, I would not. I couldn't be happier with the way things have turned out. I have no regrets. So Mark Hamilton, who began his professional career here in State College, which also means he played in Williamsport against the Cutters, got to the majors in 2010, played in the majors for part of the time in 2011, earned a World Series ring, and is now a medical resident at Long Island Jewish Hospital at the Medical Center. And as a resident, is also doing work in the ICU and is in the front lines right now in suburban New York with COVID-19. Thought that would be a good story to start the day with. As much as most of you were wrapped up in Luke wearing Steelers garb. I want to thank my friend Dave Baker, by the way, for sending that story to me, which was terrific. I always liked Mark. DJ would get so mad at each other. I always felt like at times an intermediary. You don't want to be in that spot. You don't want to do that. But at the same time, I really like DJ, and still to this day, I mean, DJ finally retired from baseball, believe it or not, Mark Dijon, this past season. So, he could come to State College 2-3 times a year. I always got together and talked with him. Hamilton, I just always liked. Always liked Mark. And now to see him do something like this, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Again, when you do some of the pregame interviews with players, you have to do some research on them and not just like, hey, you know, have you adjusted hitting a fastball in this level? It's like, oh, for goodness sakes. No, you got to do better than that. You got to have a little research on somebody. That's why I knew about his family, about his dad. So when we did the interviews, we had him on the pregame show a couple times. You know, you get to know about his grandfather. You get to know about his dad in the medical field. And for example, Scott Sibwell, who was the... Who's in the athletic department? He'd be the number two the Sandy Barber in the athletic department here. He was at Tulane at the time Mark was there. Said he'd know him. But I just thought it was a great story that had a local tie about somebody who was here, spent his summer here in his first professional season, finally worked his way to his majors, obviously accomplishes a goal and a dream, and has a World Series ring, which he says he hardly ever wears. Essentially, it's put away, he says, in a very safe spot, but now is on the front lines of COVID-19 as a resident. It's, you know, and obviously as a resident on his way to being a doctor. It's impressive. It's an impressive story. And I'm not surprised. If you know Mark at all, you're not surprised that's where he is now. You're not surprised he's doing that. I just think it's a terrific story. Kirk Cherok is Penn State's new offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. Now, we heard from Tyler Bowen last week. We're going to get a feel from Kirk as to what, you know, how he's trying to somehow, in a new job with a new quarterback, you know, you have to get used to people and so forth. In other words, you know, he probably can tell you all the nuances of Tanner Morgan. He's probably still trying to figure out what some of the nuances of Sean Clifford and Will Levis happen to be. And Taquan Roberson and Michael Johnson. And it's kind of tough when you can't work them out. And it's really tough when you can't work them out. And we're going to hear from him. And it'll be in the, and then Jimmy Sotos in the final half hour of the show today. Second straight year you've had a senior go from Bucknell to a Power 5 school for their final season of basketball. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Howell's Wharf. Great, great service department. They're open 7 to 4 Monday through Friday. And check online for some great products. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Go online, check out some of the great product lines they have at Sunbury Motors. And don't forget about the service department, open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. They do great work there. They're the pros' pros. All right, before we get to Kirk Cherok, I know we're going to do our play-by-play call today, and I know what Matt's picked out. But this is also the anniversary today, on this date, 1974, that Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's career home run record with number 715. Now, Kirk Gowdy called it that night, called it brilliantly on NBC. Milo Hamilton on the Braves Network made a great call as well. I always felt that the best call of all was by the, quote, opposing team announcer, the Dodgers legend Vin Scully.
Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
Thank you.
a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth.
You know what? Hank Aaron came here to State College, 1996. He threw out the first pitch at a Penn State baseball game at Old Beaver Field, which is now where the soccer practice fields are, and was a part of the guest speaker series. Had a chance to interview him. Absolute, pure class. And by the way, we want to know what something about Hank Aaron a lot of people don't know? He is a diehard Cleveland Browns fan. And not only that, over the years, in disguise, has sat in the dog pound. Bet you didn't know that, Matt Catrillo.
I did not know that.
Right? He would never let his kids wear Steelers garb. All right, so.
Well, he should in that case. That would be the rival.
Can't do that. Browns fan.
Exactly.
All right. You know, as opposed to other fathers who behind their back is finding out. All right. Kirk Ciarrocca is Penn State's new offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. And Kirk Ciarrocca talked about how they've been able to get through this time when he was expecting to be on the field physically teaching the offense to quarterbacks and others alike.
Then as a coach from before you took the Minnesota job to now, what do you think the biggest things in your development as a coach you learned from that position, from that time there?
I think specifically I've learned about the Big Ten and the caliber of players and the caliber of teams that we're playing against. You know, other than that, I mean, it's just you're learning every day in this business, you know, and I'm always looking to learn. And I think from every experience that you have, you've got to be able to examine that and learn from it, you know. So we're just learning every day, just like everybody else.
Next up, Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle.
Hey, Kirk, how are you today?
Doing well, Rich. Thank you.
Kirk, can you describe your assessment of the backups behind Sean, first with Will, and then also if you could talk about Taquan and Michael, and just basically what you've seen from them so far in your time on the staff?
Well, because I really have not seen any of them throw anything like that, you know, and I've really studied because they Will only played in the Ohio State and Rutgers games. I don't have a great baseline on him either. So I had a lot of chance to watch a lot of Sean's film and his playing. But the one thing I can tell you is all three of the guys have a great work ethic and the ability to learn. So that's what I've been able to do. Our time's really been spent in the classroom, so I've got a feel for them as people, how they learn. And they're very intelligent guys, been well trained, and looking forward to continuing to work with them. But I'm anxious to be on the field with them and watch them throw and watch them process stuff in real time.
Bob Flounders, Harrisburg.
Hey, Kirk, how you doing?
Doing well, Bob. How are you?
I'm good. That's quite an impressive clock you have in the background there. That's one of the bigger ones I've seen.
Oh, well, you can thank my wife, I guess.
Kirk, we were talking to Tyler Bowen last week, and he was kind of very impressed because of your knowledge of the finer details of all the positions on an offense, not just, you know, the quarterbacks and the wideouts, the tight ends, the guards, the tackles, and the centers. I was just curious, how long did it kind of take you to kind of master kind of the knowledge of all those positions? I know that you've been coaching for a while, and how does that help you with the installation of a new offense and maybe also in games, knowing kind of where everyone's supposed to be and what they're supposed to be able to do?
I think it's it started out with kind of a product of my background. As a GA, I had a opportunity to work with the tight ends, so I became interested in trying to make myself an expert in coaching tight ends. When I coached at Western Michigan, Western Connecticut, Division III school, I was the offense coordinator there, and our offensive line coach quit in July. And so I had no choice, but I had to coach the offensive line that year. We had another guy on staff that could have coach the quarterbacks. So I engrossed myself in that. And that really was very eye-opening for me and fun, and probably really helped my development as a coach, you know, because I became fascinated with that area. So even though I moved back to quarterbacks and receivers after that year, I've always been very intrigued with O-line play. And so I constantly was asking the different line coaches I worked with, why, what are we teaching here? What, you know, just fascinated by it. Initially, I was, you know, the receivers coach. I think my next job was at Princeton as a receivers coach, but I was still fascinated by coaching the offensive line. So, and then I had an opportunity later in my career to coach the running backs for a year at Delaware. Again, became fascinated by it and the intricacies of coaching that position. So it's probably was a back, you know, just by luck that started out that way, where I was forced to learn other positions and then just became fascinated by it. And it definitely helps you. My job is not to be the expert for offensive line play. We've got an unbelievable offensive line coach and Coach Trout. Unbelievable tight ends coach, unbelievable wide receivers coach, unbelievable running backs coach. My job is not to be the expert, but I think that it helps as a coordinator, that because I know the big picture and how everything works together, that I can help them be the expert, help them become, maybe help them, maybe give them one little tidbit that can help them be a better position coach. And I think that's part of my job. I look at it that way. Just like Coach Franklin, I know he looks at it, part of his job is to help us all be better position coaches and help me be a better coordinator. So I do think it helps, but it's, I love football, you know, and all the little things that go into it. So I'm interested in everything. And I'm learning from these guys every day right now. And that's one of the exciting things about joining a new staff, is you have an opportunity to learn from a bunch of different people who have had all these different experiences in within their career that have helped shape them and their philosophies and thoughts. So it's been a lot of fun, and we have a really, you know, fantastic offensive staff. I mean, just sharing a bunch of different knowledge, and it's helped shape me, and I've learned a bunch too.
Next up, we have Mike Gross, Lancaster.
Hi, Kirk. Thanks for doing this today. I'm wondering what you've learned from sort of the experience of trying to install an offense remotely. What have you learned about how guys learn, how you teach, and also, are there any guys in particular that seems to work for? They ask a lot of good questions, they're picking it up fast, et cetera.
Well, I think the one thing that, you know, our players have shown right now is their ability to respond to the situation, you know, and that's really a tribute to Coach Franklin and the championship culture that he's built here at Penn State. We've been presented with a situation, and now we have to attack what we have to work with. And, you know, so we're doing this remote learning with it right now, and the guys have attacked it, the staff. We're all learning on the run with this. None of us, this is a whole new endeavor for all of us, everybody in the coaching profession. But what we've been doing is doing a great job of sharing ideas and thoughts of what's worked really well in these meetings, what might has not worked quite as well, what we need to adapt. And I think the players have done an unbelievable job with, you know, just staying engrossed in it. And they know that, hey, this is a situation. We're not going to be able to install something and go out and walk through it. So we've got to study it a little bit harder right now. maybe than we would have had to in the past with it, because we can't physically go out and do it. So the credit really goes to the players and how hard they've worked at it so far. And I've been really pleased with what they've been able to grasp. And the quarterback meetings, you know, are always more discussion oriented than lecture oriented. I need to have feedback from them, questions that they may have. I have to feel comfortable asking those questions. And so they've been awesome, you know, as far as that goes. But we're learning, we're all learning every day. Every time we have one of these meetings, something comes up that we think of, hey, we could do this or we could do that. So, but it's just making us better.
Ben Jones, statecollege.com.
Hey, Kirk, thanks for doing this. I'm curious, you know, you talk about getting to know the players, but getting to know the staff that you were working with, getting to know James, it's obviously it's different when you're doing it, you know, over a phone or over a video. What has that process been like to kind of have that rapport, especially with James, since you are new and since, you know, so many of you are new on staff?
Well, I think that one is we had the advantage. We've been together since January now. I think it would have been a lot more difficult if, you know, this crisis would have happened, started January 4th, and we would have been in a remote learning situation right then. So we had some time together to get to know each other a little bit and to feel comfortable enough with each other to say what's on our mind. He has a culture here where, you know, people are going to speak up and he wants everybody's opinion. So you're already immediately, once you come in and be part of this family here, you're immediately comfortable with giving your opinion and speaking your mind. That's what he wants, so that he can have all the information to make the best decisions moving forward for the program. So right away, as soon as the first meeting I had with the offensive staff, you know, usually when you go somewhere new, there's an adjustment period where guys aren't really comfortable giving their feelings or how they really feel about something. There's usually two schools of thoughts. There's one where everybody is trying to tell you exactly what they think you want to hear, or people are being, if I said it was red, they're going to say it's blue, you know, but that's not the case at Penn State. Everybody's on the same page and everybody was felt really good about speaking their mind and giving their opinions. And when you're building a system like we're building here, that's needed, right? And I said before that we've got as good assistant coaches as anybody in the country. You know, I feel like we've got the best group of guys I've ever worked with. So as we're putting this system together, you know, Penn State's offensive system, it's been we've been all working together and all contributing together. And it's definitely not, it's not my system. It's our system now. It's Penn State's players. It's the coaching staff. And we've all contributed to this thing. And that's what's been great and really exciting about it. When you have the right culture and the right direction and you get a group of guys together that have had all the experiences that our staff has had, and, you know, you build something, it can be exciting, you know, and I'm really excited about where we're headed and the direction that we're going. And I honestly can't wait to see this offense in motion.
Audrey Snyder, The Athletic.
Hey, Kirk, good morning. Thanks for your time. You had mentioned this blending of ideas with the offense. James has talked about it before, and you just said, you know, you kind of can't wait to see this offense to get it going. How do you monitor progress at this point, given that everybody's all over the place? I mean, are there ways you can see, okay, this guy's more up to speed with something? I mean, can you quiz him, or is it just totally wait and see at this point?
The players you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, we've been that's one of the things that, you know, that we're learning and I think is going to make us all better coaches in the long run. One of the things that we've started to do is, you know, we will have a meeting and then for us, one of the ways we're getting feedback is we'll send them a quiz on the material that we just went over. Right. And, you know, they'll send you the quiz back, you know, and so you get a look at it, and you can really kind of grade yourself as a teacher, right? You know, if the guys all bomb the quiz, then you have to look at yourself and say, shoot, I did not do a great job. I did not do a great job presenting this material. What was wrong with my presentation here? So the feedback has been immediate. At least that's how we've been attacking it. You know, and again, really pleased with the what we've been getting back from the players from a quiz standpoint. So they're obviously grasping the material. The key right now is, as we're approaching this, is we've got to make sure our players understand, you know, execution is about alignment, assignment, technique, and then doing it, right? You got to be able to do it to execute something, right? So right now, you know, we're focused on alignment, assignment, and technique, making sure they understand the whys. Why is it this way? Why is this better with it? And then when we get this way, so when they get back here and we start practicing, now we can focus. They already know the alignment, assignment, and technique. Now we can focus on those little details that allow you the best chance to do your job, right? And that's offensive football, is 11 guys working together, all doing their job and trusting the guy next to them.
Next up is Donnie Collins, Times Tribune.
Hey, Kirk, how you doing? You kind of mentioned that, you know, it's our system now. How much did you get done before everything kind of broke apart there? You know, kind of taking in input from the other coaches, and how different do you think it'll look than what you guys did at Minnesota last year?
Oh, it's definitely going to look different. We have different players with different skill sets. You know, we came up with a whole new set of communication and terminology that's different from Minnesota. The players at Minnesota, if they walked in the meeting, they would not understand the jargon that we're using. You know, we got a lot done, right? We put the system in before this happened, right? We had put together the system as a group with it. So the great thing about it is, and I'm sure one of the reasons why Coach ended up selecting me to be the offensive coordinator at Penn State, is the philosophies were the same, and there was already a lot of similarities between the two systems already. I know that's one of the reasons why I felt like when Coach offered me the job that this would be a smooth transition, that I knew our philosophies were in line, Coach Franklin and my philosophies were in line, and that this wasn't going to be like they were speaking English and we were going to come in and teach them how to speak French, right? We're already speaking the same language, same beliefs, and so we've just built a system that we feel like will put our players in the best positions to be successful, and that are taking advantage of the talents and skill sets that we have at Penn State, which is always your goal, no matter where you're coaching at. And every single year in the off season, you're analyzing your personnel and trying to build your system around a way to accentuate your players' strengths and limit their weaknesses.
Kirk Ciarrocca, the Penn State offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, more with him in the next half hour. By the way, tonight on Eagle 107, starting at 7 o'clock, you'll get to hear the Phillies clinch the 2007 National League East title. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.